From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
How many of you saw the Flutter Live event held in London on the 4th of December 2018? Google announced Flutter 1.0. We've talked about how awesome it could be building apps with Flutter, but at the same event, a startup in Estonia partnered with Google to announce a brand new CI and delivery service tool called CodeMagic. This startup is Nevercode, and Nevercode built CodeMagic. Today, I'd like to thank them for sponsoring this show. CodeMagic is the first CI/CD tool created exclusively for building Flutter applications. The idea for them was, without any deep technical knowledge, app developers like us should be able to easily configure the whole flow for the Flutter platform to the users of our app on the Play Store or App Store. Because remember, with Flutter apps, you can easily build both Android and iOS applications. It's a cloud-based CI/CD tool for building, testing, and publishing Flutter apps. Users log in via GitHub and select the repository containing their Flutter application, after which they can immediately start a build with pre-configured defaults. Even the folks at Google working on Flutter have had great things to say about this. For example, Tim, the group PM for Flutter, said this: Nevercode has a really good understanding of the workflow that Flutter developers want. Their CodeMagic product takes all the pain out of the build process. That's pretty cool. So if you're a Flutter dev, build, test, and publish your Flutter apps in record time with CodeMagic. Go ahead and check them out at codemagic.io. But here's the kicker. For the time being, the tool is available to everyone at no cost because they just announced it. It's totally free. But in the future, it probably will include paid options in addition to the free plan. So you should check them out while they're still hot from the presses. Thanks for sponsoring today's show, Nevercode.
Kaushik, how have you been?
I have been good. It's December. It's that time of the year. We're about to wind the year down. We have some special treats for folks today. So I'm excited about today's episode. How you been?
I've been doing really good. Same over here. It's the end of the year. Everything kind of, have you noticed that everything at the end of the year kind of slows down? And that's not just in regards to like some feature work slows down. I see a lot of companies will do a lot of like bug fixing, tech debt, you know, you'll handle a lot of that kind of stuff because you, especially for a lot of industries, it could be finance, it could be retail, it could be whatever. They like to kind of lock their systems down at this time of year because everyone's focusing on like making sure the product's secure and it just works. I've noticed that also with like other industries too. Like I go to the gym and like the gym is just like, and every year for like the past decade or 20 years I've been working out, it's just empty in December, just empty. Well, then because it's like January 1st, you come back and it's just like this madhouse, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Jan is usually not the greatest time for like gym memberships, right? Because like usually people are like with New Year's resolution there and like flooding the gyms.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. We're doing something similar too this time just to, well, we're basically, we're locking down like all new features. But if you have to push like an urgent patch or feature, typically you have to like submit a proposal. So adding some friction, you can still do it. But the idea is basically, yeah, for the apps to be stable, we don't want people to merge like any crazy change before they head off, you know, for vacation. It's funny, like I guess like it also depends on the size of your company.
If you're a startup, you're probably shipping things still very quickly. So, but hey, anyway, it's the end of the year. Things are different, things different time of year. So hopefully everyone's having a good December. But like you said, we do have some good stuff today. And I think without further ado, let's just hop right into it.
Yeah. So actually, two quick announcements. One is,
yeah,
we're not taking any time off this December. So we'll be having episodes right through like all the 4 weeks. This is mostly also because Don mentioned that, hey, usually this time of year is when like we have our podcasts on. So we're going to try and make sure that we have episodes for actually all the weeks this month. Any other announcements you wanted to make?
No, just to add on something real quick that you said there, to make sure that what you're saying is that I express it too. One of the reasons, again, that we're doing this is to make sure that you folks have something to listen to during these traveling times. You know that you're sitting in the airports, that you're sitting in in the airplanes, or you're on a bus or a train or wherever, and you're listening to the podcast or wanting something to listen to. But what we really would like to do here at this time is also say thank you to every single one of you out there that have taken the time to A, find our podcast, download the episode, listen to it, spend time with us, you know, just once or every week or however often you listen. Kaushik and I would like to say a humongous thank you to you, the listeners.
Absolutely. The thing is, we have ups and downs too, you know, and sometimes just hearing the feedback from folks like just gives us that new wind of energy to keep going. So thank you all so much.
Yes, definitely. And kind of to further upon that announcement, to really show what we've kind of been about here at Fragmented, the podcast, we have always kind of been about sharing knowledge. And so we've actually gone a little bit further to basically extend that original vision of sharing knowledge. And what we have created actually this time that we want to share with everybody, if you haven't seen it already on social media, is the Fragmented Discord chat server. And this is a free place that you can come join and hop on and chat with other Android developers. This could be if you want to talk about Android development, mobile development in general, if you want to talk about a new framework, a new platform that's coming out. If you need help with something, hey, I'm wondering about how to this fragment thing works, or this lifecycle problem or whatever, you can come and ask questions there. This is a place where we want all of the community to be able to come and help each other out. Kaushik and I will both be there. We're not going to be available 24/7 to help everybody out, which is why we want the community to be involved, but we will also be there. If you would like to learn more, you can go to fragmentedpodcast.com and it'll be within the first or second post. And on the left-hand side or in the menu, depends on what kind of device you're viewing it on, we have a Fragmented chat link there, which will give you all the details where you can install the Discord app and the install link, the invite link for the actual chat server itself.
Yep. And I'll make sure to add a link in the show notes for today's episode, so that way folks can quickly get to that link as well.
So Kaushik, one of the questions that folks have asked us already is, why didn't you use Slack? And I wonder if you might be able to provide some feedback on why we haven't used Slack.
Absolutely. So, well, Slack is amazing. Everyone uses Slack. We use Slack mostly for a lot of the workplaces that we are at. The only trouble that we've had with Slack is obviously it's a paid service and there's like a limitation, right? I think it was 10,000 messages, I think, when it's free. Typically, the idea is because our community is growing, we have quite a few users. And like Don mentioned, this is mostly for the community that we're doing it. So we're hoping that this grows to a big community, in which case, the costs tend to add up a tad bit. So instead, what we decided was maybe choose a service that's completely free. And Discord, actually, it works very similar to Slack, and it's pretty good so far. Don and I have been sort of like testing the waters a little with this, and it seems like it's working like really good. And most importantly, it has unlimited message history. So a lot of the good conversations, if you have like tips and a lot of the good stuff that's coming out there, that is for perpetual history, just available for you to go back and search and for us to link into. So hopefully this is like the happy medium between using Slack, but also having something that doesn't necessarily break the bank for us.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we were to use Slack with the paid one, we would just literally go broke real fast.
Yeah.
And that 10,000 message limit thing was always a real bummer to me on companies and public Slacks that use that weren't able to pay to users, because to me, that's where the real power comes in, is that where you remember that somebody said something and you can kind of search for that term and then it shows up. But when you have that 10,000 message limit, it says, hey, you can't get to that message because it's a free version. So we hope that Discord makes it a little bit easier for us.
Another question we keep getting, Don, is why didn't we just use like Telegram, or, you know, Discord generally tends to be used by a lot of gamers. We aren't necessarily big gamers. Why did we still choose Discord?
That's a good question. So the main reason we went with Discord, other than the reasons that we mentioned in the Slack explanation, is because Discord allows us to have various channels or rooms or whatever you want to call them, where kind of discussions can be broken out into. So for example, at this time, we have a number of rooms which will grow over time. Some of them are, of course, regular ones like general and random. And then we also have rooms like you know, app review, where you can, you know, review your app or ask for reviews of your app, architecture, design patterns, regular design, where it might be talking about material design, Flutter, if you're interested in that, introduction channel, where you can kind of introduce yourself, random testing, iOS. We can continue to add channels there. And that's one of the main reasons we're using Discord. It also has, you know, really nice apps. So if you are running on Windows, Mac, you know, Linux, iOS or Android or anything like that, you can download an app for your device and then run it real easily. So that's kind of the main reason, allowed us to have different rooms. Telegram really doesn't have that feature right out of the box. So it just made more sense to hop over to Discord. And furthermore, Discord is mainly built for originally for gamers, but a lot of other industries have been picking up, such as finance and a few other ones as well. So kind of just made sense for us at this point in time. And then the last thing to wrap it up for the Discord group is that we do also want to make sure that we model ourselves as good stewards of the community. So we do have a code of conduct that we require everybody to abide by. It's kind of the general stuff. Just don't be mean to people. Be nice. Don't be rude. Don't, you know, that kind of stuff. No stalking people. None of that creepy stuff. You can check it out in our post at fragmentedpodcast.com. It's linked there. And you can see the full code of conduct. It's actually based upon the a adapted version of the Contributor Covenant version 1.4, which we actually link to at the bottom in the attribution. So if you have any questions, feel free to let us know.
Nice. I'm excited about the Discord channel. Many times people also, like folks also basically send us messages on Twitter or like emails, and it's hard for me or Don to get to it sometimes. So I'm hoping this will like help a lot with that stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of folks will ask, hey, I'm having just this morning, someone sent me a message. Hey, I'm having a problem with the fragment and this recycler view. Can you help me? And right now I just simply don't have the time to help. And I actually replied back and said, you know what? This is a perfect opportunity. Drop that question to the general group. What's going to happen is the many people in there, which is already, you're climbing towards 100 right now. And we've only announced it like an hour or two ago. There's a lot of people in there already. You drop that question, you're going to get a lot of responses back. And I think the collective community's knowledge is much greater than mine or yours, or mine and yours combined, and then get a lot better feedback.
Yep. So excited about this. All right, Don. But for today's episode, we want to do something interesting. And here's the thing. As software developers, sometimes what I've noticed is we tend to know our machines pretty well, right? Like the development workstations. And we tend to have different tips and tricks up our sleeves. I realized the other day that I use this productivity software. And I use it a lot. And I thought like, hey, maybe this might be a good thing to ask, because I'm curious to see what are the different things that you use for your productivity tools and like how you can like get different stuff up and going.
Dude, it's on. Let's do it.
Have you heard of this software called Keyboard Maestro?
So this, for the folks that are kind of a little background info here before I answer that question directly. Kaushik and I, when we set up our shows, we usually we've set up some notes of kind of things we want to talk about. And I saw Kaushik had posted something about Keyboard Maestro. And it's actually something that I've been looking into. Now, I haven't spent any time at all actually installing it. But when I was on Windows a long, long time ago, I used different, you know, keyboard and command utilities. And from what I heard, I was just looking this up a week or so ago, and Keyboard Maestro kept coming up. So have I heard of it? Yes. Have I played with it? Absolutely not. I totally want to learn more about it. What is it and what do you use it for?
Absolutely. So Keyboard Maestro is, there's like some very cool things with it. So what I'll do is I'll add a link in the show notes to like a link. So that is a referral code. Like I've been using Keyboard Maestro ever since I got my very first Mac, which is quite a few years back. And this is like really rock solid software. So what it does is it essentially takes over your keyboard in some ways. Now it's, let me try to explain what it is. The reason it's a little tricky to explain because it's not just, it does a whole bunch of things, right? Essentially any inputs that you put into your keyboard, it allows you to run actions on them. So what are like some good examples? The most common thing is like, say I want keyboard shortcuts to work. It allows me to like do that, right? Here's the subtle advantage with it. Because you can have Keyboard Maestro sync what are called your macros. So each of these different productivity steps that you have or workflows that you have, they're called macros. So the first advantage is they have very good syncing. So if you have multiple machines, so I have a machine on my work laptop. I have like on my personal laptop that I'm using here. All my macros are synced. The advantage with this is think of it as basically having synchronized keyboard shortcuts across all your machines and across all your apps. So I can say, for example, hey, I'm in the Chrome browser. Anytime you hit Command Q, I'm not sure if you know, but like with Chrome, there's this default where basically if you hit Command Q, it'll ask you to hit Command Q again, right? What you can ask Keyboard Maestro to do is like all kinds of crazy things. You can say, hey, every time I hit Command Q, simulate 2 Command Q keystrokes. Or I could do the reverse, like in the early days when I was like, well, Command Qs, I'm too trigger heavy on Command Q. I could actually basically say anytime you hit Command Q in any browser, in any application, sorry. So if it's Chrome, if it's Safari, if it's Firefox, these are the days where you didn't have like where they wouldn't reopen with the previous tabs. Heck, some of them didn't even have tabs at that point, right? So I could say every time you hit Command Q, intercept that command, pop a dialog box saying, hey, are you sure you want to like quit? And then I could click yes or no, and clicking yes or no would like allow me to execute any action, you know? And that's one advantage. You can basically intercept any keyboard inputs. Another very common thing that folks use is basically like, you know, it's called It's one of those things where if I type like a snippet, it just auto-expands. Text expander, sorry, that's the one. You can simulate the same thing for Keyboard Maestro. So that means I don't have to have like multiple applications installed. Like I just have Keyboard Maestro and it does it. For example, I can give you two quick ones that I use all the time. Anytime I type DTHU, it inserts the current day in a human readable format. If I type DTISO, it inserts it in like, you know, the ISO format. So I don't have to worry about, so I have like a whole bunch of these things, right? Like for my email, for my zip codes, for my work address, for my home address, like I can barely remember half these things. I have terrible memory. So all I have to do for inserting my zip code is zip W, and then it just inserts the zip code. A kind of hack there, like that is pretty interesting, is typically for these text expanding things, sometimes you might actually use these words in regular sentences and you don't want it to completely like, you know, nuke that. So what I do is I always use a dot dot at the end of these snippets. So for my zip, my work address, I type ZIPW dot dot. And then Keyboard Maestro knows that, hey, that should basically expand.
When you do that dot dot at the end, do you have to press like tab or space, or how does it know to auto expand, or does it just recognize the auto way and say, all right, boom, I'm just going to expand it, or what?
Yeah, so that's the beauty with Keyboard Maestro. You can configure anything. It just basically intercepts commands. So you can basically say, hey, when you type ZIPW dot dot and tab, only then expand. You can also say, no, I don't personally use, because I'm using the dot dot at the end, like very rarely do I have to use that in an actual sentence. So for me, I don't even think twice. I just type zip W dot dot and it just expands it automatically to my zip code.
That's amazing. Okay.
And the beauty is, again, like because it's synchronized across all machines, today I'm like, oh, I should really add that. I'll add that here. I'll close my laptop. You know, I'll be on my merry day. I'll go to work. I'll open my work laptop. And I can just continue using it like it, you know, existed always.
Oh, wait. So does it sync to the cloud?
Yeah. So basically, it syncs to, like, Keyboard Maestro has its own sync server. It has its own sync server. That's one option. They also do like the Dropbox thing. So you can say, hey, keep all of it synced in Dropbox.
Okay.
If I remember right. I just use the built-in one because it's just so good. So, and I've chatted with the developer for like quite some time before, and like from the early days when Keyboard Maestro was not that big. These days, like anyone on a Mac uses it. So I love this software to bits. That's like some cool things you can do. For example, for Android developers, on Android Studio, I have some keyboard shortcuts too. So I don't ever use the native Android Studio keyboard shortcut thing anymore, because this way it's synchronized across like all my machines, right? And also that way I can keep my Android Studio setup as close as possible to everyone, but at the same time, if there's something that really annoys me, then I can just like quickly use that. Let me do one thing. Let me pull up my Keyboard Maestro and tell you one of the things I have in Android Studio.
Can you have it write tests for you?
We should ask the developer maybe one day.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. The other cool thing with Keyboard Maestro is you can say, hey, intercept it only in these applications. So don't intercept in any application. So if I have command Q, I can say only intercept it for browsers, you know, or another really cool, oh man, I have so many of these that I'm excited to tell you about. So let me quickly tell you the Android Studio one. So you know, there's that expand to level one thing where, like, if you're in code, you can like hit a keyboard shortcut and then it like compress all your snippets. I don't know what the native one. Yeah, I think the native
command
one
minus
was...
or something. Command shift minus or something.
Command shift minus. Yeah. So command shift minus. So oh yeah, that's what it is. So command shift minus, I think by default, like, compresses everything. So like in places like Kotlin, this is annoying because when you compress it, it'll just show you the class file, right? Like just the name. So what I did is I intercepted it to, there's also another specific command for folding saying expand to level one in Android Studio. So I've intercepted command shift minus to all, because that's the only thing I want. And I know this might differ for different people, but when I'm looking at a file, that's all I care about.
So what does expand to level one mean again? Can you break that down again?
Sure. So if I have like a class and I have different functions or like methods in those, what I want is almost like, you know, a signature of the method. So it's very similar to hitting, what is it, command F12, I think, where you have like the signature of the method.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the signature basically shows like the variables and all that. So, but when I'm like browsing through code, typically what I want is just like the code for all my methods to be folded. And so that's like level one, right? Now, if you have nested blocks within those methods, then you can like also compress just level two and like different kinds of things like that. Or if you have nested classes. So usually like expand to level one is what, again, you can like look at the menu. It's something very specific to the way I work. I don't necessarily know, but the advantage is you can do these kind of crazy things, right? Like you can say, oh, just, and so that's like one advantage. The other huge advantage that I think is lost from like most other programs is in order to record these snippets, it is ridiculously easy. So all I can go to Keyboard Maestro and say, hey, I'm going to enter this keyboard trigger and these are the actions I want to do. And these actions that I want to do, they're not in like some terse language that you have to learn and like a different DSL. You can literally hit a record button and say, I'm doing a certain set of things now. Anytime I hit this keyboard shortcut, I want Keyboard Maestro to execute the same set of things. So you can just say record, go back to your program, do all the crazy things that you want to do, come back, and then hit the stop recording. And then it'll show you a list of the different things that it noticed that you're doing. And then you can tweak those settings as well and say, do this, don't do that. Actually, that thing, I just did it now because of the demo. Like if I was moving a window away from what I was doing, it'll just like remove that stuff. It is crazy useful. If you are a Mac user, there's a 20% discount if you use the code that I have here, but I think it's like a one-time purchase of like $30 or something. It's the best $30 I've ever spent in my life. Like this is literally the first thing I install like on any of my new Macs, because immediately it just gives me a whole host of stuff.
Wow. Okay. So this is kind of what I was looking for, especially because I was mainly looking for the text expander feature, but this in itself is kind of the text expander on steroids, it seems.
Oh, absolutely. Here's another thing that I do. Typically, at my company now, we have started to use Jira, unfortunately or fortunately.
depends how you look at it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if I'm in a tab or a Safari like browser and I'm looking at an issue, typically what I want to do is just give me the issue number. I don't want anything else, because like when I'm writing code, I want to point to that issue. What you can do in Keyboard Maestro, and I have a script, and if folks are interested, I can send you this. Basically, it will pluck just the Jira ID from the browser URL you're on. And the way I do it is I run a script inside. So I tell Keyboard Maestro, pick the browser URL, run a bash script, or you can run like, I think, shell scripts, you can run a Ruby script, you can run Swift, I think, you can run like a whole bunch of things. You can say run the script on this, with this output do something. And so typically what I do is I run the script to do some regex parsing. I remove off the ID and then I dump it into like, you know, the clipboard. So you can also use it as a clipboard manager, which I use.
Will it manage your clipboard too?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Wow, this thing does a whole bunch of stuff.
This thing is like a one-stop, like, you know, just Yeah, it is so good. It is like one of the best pieces of software on my machine. Like, I just cannot use my Mac anymore without this. It's so useful. So,
is it one of those things that where if you just install a new if you get a new computer and you don't have it, like you're completely lost?
It is. It depends on how crazy you go. But with me, it tends to be, over the years, I've tried to be good with like just like not going too whole hog with my customizations. Like, I remember 10 years back before me, like people would use my machine and they're like, I don't know what's happening. Like, you know, because they would use my computer and like nothing works. Like, you know, half these keyboard strokes don't do the things that I expected to do. I've gotten better about that stuff, especially because these days when I move machines and like, you know, with work and stuff, it's just so hard to keep track of everything. And if one of those things don't work, like it just destroys your whole productivity session. I've gotten good about that. But with Keyboard Maestro, usually I just install it because it just ramps up my productivity by 10x. So,
you had mentioned something previous before that you did something with DuckDuckGo as well with Keyboard Maestro, or what did you do there?
So, yeah. So here's the thing that I do with DuckDuckGo. When I'm typically, for folks who don't know, I like to use DuckDuckGo as my search engine, and this is mostly because of the privacy thing, right? Like, you know, recently Facebook and like even Google like ran into some sort of murky things with like the way they like, you know, with the privacy stuff. So I was like, you know what, I should give DuckDuckGo a chance. What happens though is, as good as DuckDuckGo is, it's just like sometimes it's not as good as Google with their searching, right? So typically what I do is I search for something in DuckDuckGo, right? And if I don't think that the results satisfy what I want to do, DuckDuckGo has this feature called bangs. So what you can do is you can, for example, if I go to DuckDuckGo and I type G bang, and this is like the exclamation mark. So G exclamation mark space my search query. What DuckDuckGo will do is it'll basically understand that I wanted to reroute it to Google search engine. So it'll just like do a Google search again with the same thing and just like send me to the Google page. And they have a whole bunch of things. So if I'm searching for a movie, I can just type RT bang. So that's like Rotten Tomatoes. Or I can do YouTube. I can do like a whole bunch of... So this is like DuckDuckGo's feature about like bang syntaxes, right?
Oh, it's like a whole new world just opened up to me right now.
I can actually add a link to the DuckDuckGo's page about like the DuckDuck bang syntax. It's pretty cool. The trouble though is like every time, especially when I'm coding, Google's like, when you have to search Stack Overflow or like programming questions, like Google just like destroys every other search engine, right? So I don't want to keep like doing the switch now and then. So I have a keyboard shortcut. I think it's Option Control G or something. So anytime I'm in a Safari URL or a Chrome browser or a Safari or the Safari browser, if I've completed a search for DuckDuckGo and I'm like not happy with the results, all I have to do is just type this keyboard shortcut that I have. And what Keyboard Maestro will do is it'll change my search query to have a G bang at the beginning of it with a space, and then it just like re-executes the page. So literally I'm like, I want the Google search results. Boom, type a keyboard shortcut. It'll just like redo everything and then it'll show the Google search results.
Okay, so can you walk me through a flow? Like, you're going to search for cat videos.
Okay, I'm searching for cat videos on DuckDuckGo, right? Straight up, just right. Like, you know, these days with most browsers, it's like pretty straightforward. Like, you just type it in the browser top.
Cat videos. Now I get DuckDuckGo.com/Q=cat+videos.
Got it. And I'm like, I don't exactly like this as much, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to type Option Control G, which is my keyboard shortcut. And what what Keyboard Maestro does is it goes to that same browser where I've typed the query. So where you have cat space videos, the text, it inserts a G and an exclamation mark in front of the cat videos query and just like types enter after that.
All right. That's a game changer for me right there. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so what happens then is it just like just in a split second, it just opens the Google like search results. I didn't do this as much initially. I was like, I'll type the G bang. But when I'm programming and I'm like searching for stuff, like Google just like hands down beats DuckDuckGo with like those specific queries. So at that point I was like, I'm not going to like constantly just keep like typing this D bang. So this keyboard shortcut, and like, so it's just like, there's a whole, and Actually, for those who don't know, I've actually released YouTube videos a long, long time ago. And I'll try to add this. So another, this was like really advanced because this was my days when like, you know, this is crazy KG trying to like do everything. I don't know if you know, Tom, but a lot of like, you know, the how you have the auto pairing of brackets. Most text editors today, it's like a table, like it's table stakes, right? Like it's like almost obvious. So if I type like an open curly brace, it automatically sort of closes the curly brace. I actually wrote a macro in Keyboard Maestro that would simulate that in any program. And it was like, it wasn't that dumb where you just type open curly, you type like an open curly brace and, you know, it just stays there. I did things where I'm like, actually, after I write the open curly brace, wait for a few seconds. If you don't hear any input, don't do anything. But if I start typing something right away, then take that input and then wrap that input with a curly brace. I'll put it's a little hard to explain this. I'll add like YouTube video links to, and I demoed this with a YouTube video. This is the early days of me using Keyboard Maestro. I use this text editor called BB Edit, which is like also an amazing text editor. So just like there are like a ton of crazy things you can do with Keyboard Maestro. Like I've just probably scratched 20% of what I do. There's like a world of things you can do with Keyboard Maestro. So that's why I thought I should like let you know.
That's amazing. There's a ton of stuff that you can do with this thing. That's crazy. The whole thing where you like the text expander thing is huge for me because I've always found that to be very useful. You can use text expanding in a various different types of scenarios. One of actually, which is in presentations, if you're doing public speaking and you want to show some code on the screen and you can pre-plan this, like, all right, well, I know at this section, I'm going to insert this code. And actually the folks at the Flutter Live conference was yesterday. So this show is, you know, by the time this come out, Flutter Live's already happened a while ago. But during the Flutter Live conference, Matt Sullivan, one of the presenters, and the other presenter, I forget her name off the top of my head, I have to find it. They both were using these like whatever text expander inside of the IDE they were using. And it was able to just, boom, pop in the huge chunk of code that they needed. So they didn't have to write it right there on the screen. They could just put it there on the screen and say, all right, now here's what this code does. They explain it, move on to the next piece. So it can help you in so many different ways.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, that's actually a smart way to use it too, right? Like, for example, if you're giving a presentation and you don't want to like, you know, type it out and make like typos and then realize, oh, I don't know why it's working. And then you have like one of the audience say, oh, you got a typo there. how many times has that happened to you?
Oh my goodness, so many times that's happened to me. I can't even explain to you how many times it's happened.
Yeah, because like you're sweating bullets there upstage. And I'm like, this thing worked. Why is it not working? It's like, you know, in my mind, this should work. And then you're like, oh, forgot like one of, like, you know, you had a typo. Yeah, with a lot of this stuff, you can add like custom macros to just do that and then remove it after you're done with your presentation.
The other speaker on VS Live was Emily Fortuna. Hopefully I'm saying the name right. I'm sorry if I got it wrong, but she was the other one using the text expansion. So awesome stuff. The other one that really gets me there is the DuckDuckGo thing. I've tried to use DuckDuckGo for years. I like the whole idea of it. I'm with you that sometimes, especially when I'm in the middle of flow of coding, I know what I'm looking for. I just need to find it. And that's Google's usually good at finding those technical things. But if I'm using DuckDuckGo as my default, that doesn't get kind of what I want. It gets me close and I'm like, I gotta go to Google. And the thing that's always made me switch back to Google is that split second change of like, all right, now I need to go back to the URL again and retype this query into Google. If I can just literally hit a keyboard combo and it goes, to me, that's a complete game changer. I can now start using DuckDuckGo for everything and then just have a keyboard shortcut to flip me over.
There you go. Yeah, it's as simple as just that. Like that's exactly what it gives you.
That's good. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I can go on like, and maybe I'll give like a quick snippet as to like the different things that I do with Keyboard Maestro. It's so big at this point. So like some of this is so like specific to me. For example, you use Markdown a lot too, right? So for me, like if I have a clipboard link, like Markdown syntax is like square brackets, the link, and then like open, and then you have the, you know, it has a very specific syntax. Square brackets, the title of the link, and then parentheses with the link, and then like a title. I have like a Keyboard Maestro where I'm like, hey, if you have anything in the keyboard that's a link, boom, insert a Markdown, like in a Markdown formatted way, inserted and put my keyboard cursor to the point where I have to just type the text. So just some crazy things. Like I'll try to add like snippets to all of these in like the show notes. But it's just like, yeah, it's life changing. But I mean, enough about like Keyboard Maestro and all the stuff that I've been doing. I know you mentioned like some really cool other cool tools that you use, not necessarily with the keyboard, but with a lot of like very specific stuff that you use. Like I've seen you also a few times now, like, you know, live, and I've seen like you use like a bunch of crazy apps to help with your stuff. So can you let us know some of the cool things that you've been using?
Yeah, mine's kind of all over the place, and I think we're going to have a lot of shared things here that you also have, so it'd be cool to kind of see where we also have similarities. And you probably have some of these apps installed as well. So some of these are related to development. Some of them are actually just there to help me operate on my machine. And I'll just kind of start with the first one here to get it so everyone can kind of get a good laugh. And that one is known as Muzzle. And this is an app. If you go to muzzleapp.com, like M-U-Z-Z-L-E, muzzleapp.com. And what this app does is it'll automatically mute your Mac notifications anytime you start a video call. It could be Skype, Google Hangouts, Zoom, whatever. It'll automatically detect it and mute the notifications. Because how many times have you been in the middle of a screen sharing session and all of a sudden some notification comes in and it's like, oh goodness, I didn't want everyone to see that notification. And a funny story here is back in eight years ago, I worked for a company and a bunch of friends, we were all friends, really good friends. We laugh at each other. And anytime we were doing a sprint demo, if someone noticed that they left their instant messenger open, someone else on the team would send them just this random message. Like it would be like in the middle of like the presentation, like my friend Jesse would send a message to our friend, to Josh or whatever, who's doing a presentation, and just say, "Hey man, how's that rash doing?" Just something. Something real, like not super inappropriate, but just like
just enough to keep you uncomfortable. I love it.
Yeah, and then everyone would just start laughing. Everyone knew it was a joke, but it was just like he would know, like, oh, I forgot to shut down Instant Messenger. So we would do, you know, on a similar vein, we would do similar things. This is kind of a divergence here, but we would Hasselhoff your machine. Have you ever done that?
Oh, wow. No, I think I know what it is, but I haven't. Yeah, go ahead.
Please. Yeah, so if you leave your machine unlocked, you are automatically subject to have your background changed to some image of David Hasselhoff.
Nice.
So you just download an image. And we'd usually get the one that's kind of offensive, like David Hasselhoff laying down with a puppy or something like that. So anyway, so Muzzle app, interesting, helps you hide those notifications, good or bad, whatever they are, so you don't have any embarrassing moments pop up.
I love it. And folks should just like at least go to the page to see the demo that they have. Geez. Like it cracks me up every time. Like the different things that they have on the site, the notifications, it's so good. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's the Muzzle app site is a riot. So you'll have to go there and you'll get a good laugh. The next one I use is actually a screen management software. And I, like you, I don't like using the mouse. I don't have anything against it. I just feel that it's slower. Sometimes I have two Finder windows on my screen and I want one to take a 50% on the left and one to take 50% on the right. And so the tool I use is Divvy. That's D-I-V-V-Y. And it's a commercial tool. I think it's like $19 or $20 or something. And then you can say, hey, using a keyboard shortcut, mine is command shift space. I get this little window that pops up and it has a grid pattern. And then I've predefined in there different sections like hotkeys. So when I hit command shift space, this little window pops up and I hit L. And what that means is go to the left 50% side of the screen. I do the same thing, command shift space, and then hit R, and the other Finder window will go to the right hand side. So now I have two windows side by side I can work with. I've defined ones for full screen. So I just hit F, it goes full screen. I hit C, it goes center, like kind of like perfectly center in my screen. I have ones that are split into like 1, 2, 3, 4. So if I were to break my screen into four different equal size components, I can then put four different things on my screen, all equal size. You can define as many of these things as you want. Divvy is not the only one that's out there. There's a lot of players in the space. The other ones that are popular, Spectacle, that's actually free. You can go get that one. Different keyboard shortcuts, same principle. Magnet is another one. I think Moom is another one as well that's out there. There's a whole slew of these. I use this. This is one of those tools that when I go to a new computer, if I don't have it, I'm completely lost because I use it so much. Do you use one?
I've used a lot of these, like Moom. I used Moom, which was very good at one point. Then I switched to this open source one called Phoenix.js. I'll try to add a link to that one. It's basically like an open source tool that someone wrote. The reason I did this was because, again, this was like the crazy days where like I needed like ultimate customization, and part of it was just like me tinkering with stuff. I actually didn't need it that much. So I had this requirement where like when arranging my windows, like if you have a lot of Chrome windows open, basically what I wanted is like the front window to take the full like center, up and center. And I wanted to tile my windows on the side so I could just see enough of it to know what it was, but I wanted it hidden in the background, you know? So I wanted like a keyboard shortcut for that. And basically what Phoenix does is you can write JavaScript. It's literally just JavaScript, and you can like control your windows with that. So I used that, and now because I just have it, I just keep using it. But now that I think about it, there's no reason this just cannot be in Keyboard Maestro, because Keyboard Maestro does a lot of this stuff. So I might just move it to Keyboard Maestro and keep it there, because then I don't have to worry about when I go to a new laptop and synchronizing and stuff. I can just use this here. But I've seen you use this, and you're very good about, especially even with the audio setup with your Skype and call recorder, you have like a whole bunch of things like perfectly aligned. I'm a little more loose, where like if I have windows lying here and there, like I'm a little okay with like dealing with the mess. If that makes sense. But like, yeah, I know like you're super structured. I've seen some of your screenshots, like desktop screenshots, and like, yeah, you have it together.
Thank you. Yeah. For example, for Android development or mobile development in general, what I'll do is I'll take, if I have a widescreen external monitor, I will take Android Studio. I'll make sure that it takes up about 3/4 of the screen. And then the right 1/4 of the screen I'll leave for the emulator, or I may even adjust it a little bit more. It might be 7/8 of Android Studio, 1/8 the emulator on the right. Just, and then I can just easily fire that up with just keyboard shortcuts, just whack, whack, and then everything's where it should be and I'm done. And I imagine with something like Keyboard Maestro, I bet you I could even automate that even further to just say like some keyboard shortcut and it just sets up Android Studio and my emulator for me, just boom, boom, right away.
Oh, absolutely. You can tell it, open this program, do this with this height adjustment. Yeah, you can do crazy things with it. Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Okay, so that's the screen one. The next one is actually kind of just a general purpose tool. That's VS Code. I use VS Code for literally everything that's not Android related. If I'm writing shell scripts, if I'm writing text documents, Markdown, it could be if I'm writing JavaScript, Solidity, HTML, CSS, whatever, you name it, it's going inside of VS Code. And then just this morning, Scott Hanselman, who is from Microsoft, posted a link of how you can set up Git to actually use VS Code as your diff and merge tool.
Ooh, nice.
Which I haven't explored that yet, and I'm actually going to try that later today to see how that works. And but anyway, VS Code, tons of cool stuff you can do with it. The real power is go take a look at the plugins for it. There's so many plugins. And you actually turned me on to my favorite plugin, which is now my favorite theme of all time, which is Night Owl by Sarah Dressner, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That theme is fantastic. Like, I can't believe it.
Yeah, that the Night Owl theme is just like so good. It's like one of those things where you start to use it and you're like, huh, this doesn't look that good. But once you get used to it, it's just so good. Like, it's just hard to move back to anything.
Yeah, it's amazing. So anyway, check out VS Code. If you haven't, it's definitely worth it. It has all kinds of stuff you can do. Next one is Oh My ZHS. So Z Shell. Have you used Z Shell at all?
I have used Z Shell. I actually switched to using another one, but like, yeah, Oh My, yeah, please go ahead with Z Shell is pretty cool.
Yeah. So by default, if you're running a Mac, you're probably running Bash, which I've used for many years, and then got exposed to Oh My ZHS from guest of the show here a few times. Michael Bailey kind of turned me onto it. And then I took it a little bit further from a few other friends of mine who use it. And I have also installed a couple of plugins for it known as Spaceship Prompt. It gives you a really cool looking kind of like in your command line terminal. For example, if I'm in Git, it'll tell me like right now I'm looking at a caster.io project that I'm in. It says I'm in the caster.io Git repository on a particular branch. And that tells me if it's a writable or if something's changed. And it tells me that it's via a particular Ruby gem set that I'm using, Ruby 2.4, and I'm using Rails 5. All this is on one line, and it says how long it took to load that or whatever. And then as I start changing things, it'll tell me that I'm now changing things, or I'm moving things into different areas, or if I'm on the master branch, or it gives you all kinds of additional information. Just check out the link that we put in the show notes for Spaceship Prompt. And then to kind of further the whole usefulness of Shell is actually something called ZSH Auto Suggestions, which is kind of amazing. It actually gives you auto suggestions as you type. So code complete your Shell prompt. So if I type in a particular git command, maybe I'm doing git commit add or something like that, and I've been typing this over and over in a branch, it'll actually show me that already there, and I can just hit the right arrow and it'll just complete it for me. So maybe I'm git push origin master.
I'll just type
git pu. All of a sudden it says, hey, you won't probably do this one. It's the last thing you did of this style. I hit right arrow, enter, it's done. It'll save you thousands of keystrokes a day. So it's been a game changer for me. Those are the ones I like. What prompt are you using though?
So I actually, this is dangerous. You're getting me into a territory where I'm starting to get like a little tempted now. I actually use this. Exactly. I use this shell called Fish, which is FSH. And I'll add a link to that in the show notes. The reason I like it so much is because it actually works really well, especially on the Mac.
Swimmingly well?
I see what he did there.
Dead joke.
The Fish shell, though, is so good. I think it's very fast and responsive. That's one thing I like about it. And the beauty with it is somebody basically, I think the original creator of this was like one of the original Mac developer. He worked on like at Apple, like with some of the Mac stuff. And I think he basically just got fed up with how terse the syntax was for Bash. And he tried to make a more approachable shell prompt, right? So if you see the functions in Fish, so functions are basically how you write alias. Essentially everything is a function, right? So I'll add a link in the show notes and it'll just be easier to see some of those demonstrations, but it's pretty clean, fast, responsive, and customizing your shell prompt, which is something I encourage all developers to do, just works really well. So Don, like you were saying, the spaceship prompt thing, I'm pretty sure there's stuff there with Fish that does that. The auto suggestion, it's built in. So they have like a lot of the auto suggestions and they have like some pretty cool things that's built in, some features. So I use Fish Shell. I'll add a link to in the show notes so folks can have a look at it. But yeah, this is dangerous territory, man.
I can see I'm looking at the webpage here. It looks like the exact same auto suggestions. So definitely very interesting. So either one of them, give them a shot. I think it's probably going to help you. All right, you ready for the next one?
Yeah, let's do it. What do you have next?
The next one is, this is kind of every programmer has their own little versions of dot files. Do you have any of your own dot files lying around that are customized?
I do. I actually might have my GitHub repo with dot files too.
I think we all have one. So anyway, that's kind of the story here is just a couple of dot files. I have one for my ZSH profile. I can say that 10 times fast. And it has a bunch of different like aliases in it. Like I'll just shortcut aliases for Git. I never type Git into my command line. I don't remember the last time I did it. It's just alias to G. I have the same thing for like VS Code. It's like alias to V. When it's Sublime Text, it's alias to S. You know, ADBR means ADB restart, which just runs a couple of commands in succession. So just a bunch of different dot files. And then I have one for Git, which is a Git comp file. What has a bunch of my aliases there. So I have like G, I'll take G for Git, which is for my alias, and then RBC will be like rebase continue. So if I run into, when I'm rebasing from, you know, master or on top of master, if I run into a conflict, I'll fix the conflict, then I'll type GRBC, which means Git rebase continue, and then it'll be continue. If I get into a real bad state in my rebase, I'll type GRBA, which is Git rebase abort, gets me out of it. But I have, you know, hundreds of different aliases, and I always have to actually kind of go back and refer to them because I forget most of them when I wrote a bunch of them, and I gathered them from all over the web. So just dot files. It's just one of those things. Like once you kind of get used to those things, you kind of rock and roll with them. What dot files do you use, or what are your most common ones?
It's very similar. Like half my ones with dot files are like basically just like the aliases. I mean with fish, like now I just have those as functions, so they're just like easy. But like, you know, the get thing that you mentioned, it's the exact same thing. I have like a bajillion of them. Like at this point, get is something I think I might not be able to use when I move to a different machine, like without having my aliases, because it's just, yeah, same thing. Like I've never typed get, I think, in like a very long time. It's all just like aliased to G. I have GL, which is basically like logged in, like show my logs in one line. I have GLL, which is like show it with more information. Then I have, you know, rebase. I do the same thing. I have like a GREB, and then I have a space and an a space like for aborting, continuing, and doing a lot of that stuff. So merge is, yeah, is the aliases is where it's at. Like that's for like get, I use a whole bunch of those there.
Yeah, some of them like get aliases that I don't even remember what the real command is. Like for example, mine is very similar for like get log. Mine's get lg. Mm-hmm. It comes out colorized on whatever mm-hmm. branch it is, mm-hmm. like very formatted, very nicely, single line. Mm-hmm. It reads very well. If I type get log, I'm completely lost. Like I'm not completely, I mean, I can find my way around, but it's it's not the same. I'm like, okay, great. Now I got to reinstall all these dot files or whatever.
Oh yeah, the same thing. Even like committing, I have it at C for my branch. I have like so the other one I have is like when I have git add, typically when I do a git log, it'll actually show a list of the files with the number besides them. Mm-hmm. And what I do is when I have git add, I have G space A, and I just point to the number because I don't like typing the whole file name. So I can just point, like I'll do a git log, see the list of changes. And if it's in number 25, I just say G space A space 25 and then just adds the line number. So,
oh, cool. I'm about to get that one from you. That sounds, I could use that.
Yeah. It's just like a whole bunch of like crazy things like that. But yeah, aliases and like dot files obviously like come with a whole bunch of other things, but yeah. For sure.
And I think this is important to bring up. We're talking heavily about Git here. We're also talking heavily about command line. And I've noticed a lot of developers lately who may be starting in Android Studio and are only familiar with running Git in Android Studio. And I could see the value in that. But however, I would really, you know, encourage folks to learn the command line if you can. You will find it much more powerful. You will find it a lot easier to use, and you'll just understand what's happening under the hood so much more.
And also, like, Git is one of those things. It's like core Linux and like core, like, you know, just or Unix rather. Like, you know, a lot of those commands are just very transferable skills. And I think, like, at least for the next few years, it's definitely something that'll come in very handy. It's good to know, like, the nuts and bolts, at least for those. So, yeah, 100%. I'm with you on that. I highly encourage folks to, especially for Git and stuff, like maybe the command line.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so moving on. Mm-hmm. Next one I have is something I use all the time, especially in a team environment or even for just if I have a client that I'm working with, and that's cap, and that's K-A-P. Get cap. There it is, getcap.co. I had the URL. So get K-A-P.co, and that's a screen capture tool. But it's actually, I think it's even written in Electron or JS or something like that. But I really don't care what it's written in. It works great. The story of it actually is just runs in your toolbar up top. And then you can just click on it at any point in time and actually record part of your screen. You can drag the kind of the handles to the size. So sometimes I'll have it just go to the emulator or part of my emulator or something that I want to demonstrate. And then I can click record and go perform the actions and then hit stop. And it'll allow me to export this as like something like a GIF, a MP4, a WebM.
Oh.
And then it'll just drop it right on my desktop. And then what I can do from there very often is I'll open Slack or whatever chat tool I'm in. And I might be talking to a PM or your boss or anything like that or a client and say, here's what I'm thinking. Here's how this works. And you just drag that GIF over. It's like, here it is. Now that works great for that. It also works great for pull requests internally and even for open source projects. If you want to demonstrate how something's working and it requires movement other than just a screenshot. So I use cap a lot for that. And it really helps kind of clarify a lot of problems that people either are running into or something that you want to demonstrate. And it's open source. And I don't think it might be open source, but it's free. I do know that it's free.
Ooh. Can I ask some follow-up questions? Like, I know there's other stuff. I've used like Cloud App and like a whole bunch of other ones that eventually I just stopped using. Why do you like this one so much? Like, what about this is, It being open source is huge, right? Because that just allows you to, you know, it's not going away, which is like the other, or you're not going to be charged for it.
The big thing is like, I'm not going to be charged for it. And a lot of times I just need to create a screen recording. I don't need to upload it to a server. I don't need to have storage. I don't need any of that. Sometimes I just want a GIF I can send somebody or I can drop into Slack. And I don't want a super fancy tool. I don't want to have to install Camtasia or ScreenFlow, which are screen capture tools that are very heavyweight or lightweight, but still heavyweight compared to something like Cap. I don't want to have to install that. I want something that just works real easily. And then and I found Cap and it just did that. It just works really, really well. And I can just record what I need and then I'm done. And it's kind of just like, gives me all the minimal features I need. It's very minimalistic.
Very nice. Okay, I think I'm going to try this one. I downloaded it right now. This is something I've not used before. I like it.
Yeah, it's great. And then, you can configure it to show the mouse cursor. It'll highlight, you can configure it to highlight the clicks. You can add, there's some experimental features right now where you can tell it to hide desktop icons or, activate while you're recording. You can actually tell it to activate do not disturb, which is awesome. I think everything should have this option of when you're recording to act just kind of like Muzzle's doing. It can actually, now it can record audio. I haven't done any of the auto recording stuff with it yet, but apparently you can do audio recording too. And then, there's a bunch of different things you can push it to, like you can share it to S3, to Dropbox, stuff like that. So there's a bunch of integrations I have. So it's getting better and better.
Oh, and I like the interface too. I just downloaded it and like opened it up. It's like nice and clean. It's very like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's super small. It gives you a little dotted line around the window. When you're going to press the record button one time, and then what's going to happen is it's going to give you a dotted line. You can drag it wherever you want, drag the corner and move it wherever you want. And then once you click it again, that's when it starts recording.
Oh, nice. Like I like that about QuickTime when you have to record it on the Mac. But this, this looks like it does it in the same way, but it does so much more. Like a lot of the whole GIF thing is, again, like super useful because that's something that's so annoying. I have like a set of terminal scripts that once I have a video, I run that script on the video. So it sort of converts it with FFmpeg to it does a whole bunch of crazy things. I'd rather just use this now.
FFmpeg is awesome if you know how to use it. The problem is it's just so difficult to understand how to use.
And there's like the options, right? Like it's just like three characters with four options and you suddenly have a different thing being done altogether. Like it's super powerful. Yeah, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I have this document where I have a list of like the different options that I have that I have to run to do like the thing that I want with FFmpeg because it just has like a bajillion options, right? I can never remember it. So
exactly. Yeah, so there's all kinds of stuff that you can do with it with FFmpeg. But Cap, to me, like you said something before about QuickTime, you can kind of just do a similar thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't like how QuickTime just gave me a .mov file. Like, I hate that file. I don't want that. I just want a GIF or like I want an MP4, like something simple that I can just send to somebody. Or the real big one for me is the GIF animation, like because I literally just want to put this into a pull request and be done with it. So it's just simple, makes it easy. Okay, next one.
All right, what's up? Yeah.
So a lot of times when I'm developing, it could be a web app, a mobile app, or any type of application, I need to grab a color from an image or something like that. I have no idea what it is. Typically, there's a ton of tools to do this. What I've usually done is I've used Photoshop for years. I already have it installed. I'll just screen capture, paste it into Photoshop, use the color picker, grab the value out. Unfortunately, it does take a few seconds for Photoshop to start and uses up all kinds of memory. And if I'm running Android Studio on an emulator, forget about it. It's just, you know what I'm saying? There's another tool called SIP, S-I-P, that will run, and you can get this on the Apple App Store. Mm-hmm. It does cost a few dollars. I think it's $8 or $9 for a color picker. I know it sounds ridiculous. However, it does have a bunch of different options here. Mm-hmm. So for example, let me take a screenshot and I'm going to put this, and we'll put this on the actual site itself for the show notes. What you can actually do is inside of the color picker, there's an options in the toolbar and you can say what type of color picker color code you would like. So for example, I may say that I am working inside of Android XML and I'll select that setting. Now when I select that color, it'll actually give me the XML value for that. And I can actually just paste it in there.
That's pretty convenient. Yeah.
So I can do the same thing for Android ARB. It'll give me Swift colors. It'll give me Java colors. It'll give me all kinds of stuff like that, which is mega powerful and very, very useful. So I'll have to see if I can paste the image into the make sure we get it into the post, the website post that we have here. So I just paste it into our show notes, Kaushik, you can see here.
Oh, and there's like Android XML, RGB, ARGB. So like, yeah, they've got a whole bunch of these ready to go.
So if it works, it works if you're on web, you can use CSX hexadecimal values, Android ARGB. And what that means is you just select that preference, say, hey, I'm working in this environment. When you do a color selection, Android XML is actually going to give you an XML value. You can just paste that into your XML file. Same thing goes for NS color or Swift NS color. It'll do all that stuff. So if you're interested, definitely work it. Check it out. Again, does cost a few dollars. Does sound ridiculous to spend that money on a color picker, but considering how much I use it, kind of a no-brainer for me.
Nice. I like this too. One of my buddies from a previous company I worked at, his name is Guilherme, he actually pointed me first to SIP. I just stopped using it after some time. But like, yeah, it's taken a new life of its own. I like this.
Yeah, definitely. So from there, we kind of go into one that you had already talked about quickly, which is Droplr or Cloud App. And these are kind of for quickly sharing files. I don't use them a ton, but these are ones that are very useful to me when I'm working in an environment and I need to share an image to somewhere that I can't share a file. And when that might happen is I'm communicating with a help desk. Maybe I'm talking to some software vendor for some software, an API that we're using, and I have to talk to their help desk about something because we're running into an issue and I can't send them a file through their help system for some reason, which happens a lot, amazingly. I need to take a screenshot. I'll take a screenshot of what I'm seeing. Maybe it's an error on their site and I'll drop it into something like Cloud App or Droplr. And then that gives me a link to that file that's publicly accessible. And then I can just send that link inside of that help desk ticket saying, hey, here's what I'm seeing. And I always put like, by the way, this is a screenshot because the link looks kind of suspicious as hell. It's like,
because it's like just like a hash code or something. Like, yeah.
It's like cloud.ly/ some crazy hash or something. And I'm like, this is a screenshot, by the way. So that's very useful. And then when I combine that with the power of CAP, the screen capture tool we talk about, it even gets better because then I can actually say, here's what I'm experiencing. And I'll create a capture and then drag that file into Cloud App or Droplr or whatever. And there's a few of these different services out there that do something similar. The other one that I use, which is possibly will go away here once I install Keyboard Maestro, is Copy Clip. And that's just the keyboard clipboard manager.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very often I find that I'm working with 3 to 4 pieces of text that I need to copy and alter at one particular time. And I'm kind of just like moving between files, editing and changing things. Mm-hmm. And so this has come in very useful. But I think if you don't have a clipboard management tool, definitely install one. You'll find out that you eventually start using it like crazy. Do you find yourself using clipboard management?
All the time. Yeah, clipboard managers. I used to use... I used to use Alfred and I used to use the clipboard manager in Alfred, which I liked a lot. And I think like you have Alfred in your list, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But now I just use Keyboard Maestro as one, just because, again, I don't like to have to install multiple tools. And because Keyboard Maestro just works so well and he's a top-notch developer. So because of that, I just trust like the stuff that he has in there. I just use Keyboard Maestro now.
So let's talk about, you mentioned Alfred. Let's talk about Alfred next. I did have that in my list. I'd like to see, I don't consider myself an Alfred expert at all. I consider myself like an Alfred idiot. like I do just enough with it to make it useful to me, but I haven't really dove really deep into the tool. And I feel like you probably have. Is that true?
I've used Alfred like crazy at one point. I used to be a super power Alfred user. I supported their mega upload. There's like, they had this program where at one point they were like, if you pay a certain amount, you'll be a lifelong supporter. I definitely did like all of that because Alfred is just like an amazing tool. It's very well built. Maybe we should start off by saying what Alfred is.
Yeah, right? What is it? Yeah.
So sometimes like if you want to quickly launch an application, for example, I want to start up Android Studio. I hit Command Spacebar. It pops up like this global search bar for my whole machine, like for my whole Mac, or like if you're using a Windows computer, like it pops it up. I type AS, so for Android Studio, and then it shows up in the list of applications. Boom, I can launch it. So it's almost like a very quick application launcher. That's the most basic functionality, right? Like that's typically what like you would use it for most reasons. But it takes it to like the new level where you can like do a lot of other cool things, right? For example, some of the basic stuff that I found pretty useful with Alfred. I don't use Alfred anymore, and I'll tell you why. But I'd still recommend people like use Alfred like a whole bunch. The other thing that was super useful at one point is like if I want to quickly run the calculator. So with Alfred, you can just type, you know, you can launch Alfred, you type is equal to, like, you know, the equal to sign. And then you can type, you can just try to start typing in like any calculation and it'll just like show you in real time the value, right? What you can do also with Alfred then is like if you have something like and you want like to show it in big letters, for example, if like, you know, you're with a colleague and you're like, you have like some weird hash code or something, you can type it in there. And I think it's command Y. If you hit command Y, like boom, it'll just like show up in like a big display. That's one thing. So those are like the basic. The other thing that's super useful that you don't get with most other launchers with Alfred is you can restart, you can sleep, you can lock your computer. So, and Alfred is very good about learning your commands. So with Alfred, typically I would hit command space, which is my launcher for Alfred. I would type SL and automatically it would show up the command sleep, and then I can just like boom, hit sleep and then like move away from my computer or something, right? So it basically allows you to do a whole bunch of things. The reason I moved away from Alfred is because the keyboard launcher, like I think with the Mac, the Spotlight has become very good about like launching applications, and like a whole bunch of those things really come. So that along with Keyboard Maestro, and Keyboard Maestro is just one of those things I cannot not use because it just does a whole bunch of other crazy things. I found that I don't use Alfred as much because a lot of the things that I needed Alfred for, I can just get done with the combination of Spotlight and Keyboard Maestro. And it just means it's one less program I have to install in the future to like, you know, make sure my setup works. So that's why. And there are a whole bunch of other really good programs that I think in the early days, there was one called Quicksilver. There's also Launch Board or Launch something. Launchy, maybe? Launchy is what it's called.
Yeah, like, Launchy is one of them, yep.
Yeah, so a whole bunch of these that work. But if you're a very basic, like, I mean, Don, for you, like, if all you're using it for is just to launch applications, why don't you just use the built-in Spotlight these days? Because it's pretty good that way.
Yeah, I forgot why I moved away from Alfred. I mean, moved away from Spotlight. It wasn't finding some stuff that I needed it to find. And then I installed Alfred and it worked. And it was one of those things I'm like, all right, Alfred found it, whatever. I got the problem fixed. I'm going to move on. So there's so many things inside of Alfred that that I've seen used with like the Power Pack. And actually one of the previous guests we had on the show, Andrew Arabiter, he was quite a big Alfred Power Pack user and he had a bunch of cool things set up. So, which is kind of one of the reasons I stuck with it. So, you know, I'll take some time to explore it, but I haven't actually got the time to explore it. I do like the fact you can use different, you know, kind of like launching utilities to launch to go to, you could fire it up and say like, I think you could type in like Jira. And then if you're doing Jira, you could type in a number and it would take you directly to that number or whatever on your Jira page, if you configure it properly. So there's all that. But again, then again, a lot of that stuff could be solved with Keyboard Maestro, but it's something that I found useful. So if you're interested in exploring it, it might be worth taking a look at.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things that you can do. They have like this thing called workflow, so you can like run like crazy things with it. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a very good program for sure.
Definitely. Okay, all right. So we got a couple more left here and then we'll head out here. The one of the last couple we have here is actually a tool that I've been using for a very long time now. It's called Diffmerge. And this is one of those tools that is kind of just looks like it was built in 1999. But it's free and it's by the folks over at SourceGear. If anyone is familiar with SourceGear, it's created by a gentleman by the name of Eric Sink, who has kind of been influential in a lot of like small software businesses, business of software kind of stuff. Anyway, he's created a bunch of software products. One of them is Diffmerge. It helps you do diffing and merging on various different platforms such as Windows, OS X, and Linux. And it's basically just a diff tool. Makes it real easy to use. I've kind of just stuck with it because it's not complicated and it's just has a few basic features. The diffing algorithm is really good and it just kind of works. And I've found recently a number of times within the last few weeks, Android Studio's like auto merge without conflict has botched my files. Like, oh, really? I don't know what happened.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's really kind of, and I've had to go through and fix a number of merges recently. And so I've kind of lost a little bit of confidence and I've come back to diff merge. It's always been there for me. Mm-hmm. And it's something I kind of just installed by default because it's free. I did an upgrade to support them. You don't get any additional features. I kind of just said, hey, you know, I've been using this long enough. Let me just send you a few bucks to say thank you. But it's an interesting tool if you're looking for just a reliable diffing and merging tool that's, you know, not super fancy. Just definitely check out diff merge.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I've stuck to just using the Android Studio one. I've not run into too many crazy things yet, but yikes, yeah, that makes me feel, yeah, I probably need to like keep an eye out for that.
One of the reasons why I do use this is because I am usually in a number of different languages and a number of different repositories. So at times I might be in an Android one, which if I just stuck with Android Studio and only did Android, that would make sense for me. But sometimes I'll be in a Solidity file doing like blockchain development.
I see.
I'll be in Visual Studio Code, which now I guess has diffing and merging. I have to check that out. But I'll be in different places and I just sometimes will just be running from the command line and I'll get a merge conflict. I'm like, all right, well, I need to resolve this. And I'll just type, you know, git merge tool. And then boom, it pops up diff merge for me. It's familiar. It's like a, you know, like an old friend. I kind of hop in there, get the work done and move on. So just something that's reliable is kind of what I've really found for this one. All right. And then for the last one here, hopefully this is one that you use, Kaushik. If you don't, hopefully you'll get inspired to. And if for the folks listening, if you don't use this, hopefully you do use this in the future. This one is Flux. Do you use this at all, Kaushik?
I used to use it, but like, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. So but what does Flux do? Like, tell us what Flux does.
So Flux is, and if you look this up, it's F.LUX. So it's basically you kind of notice like that there's like a bunch of research around like blue light and you get blinded by your computer at night. And if you continually look at your computer, you'll stay up later and later and later. So Flux attempts to fix this by changing the color of your display to adapt to the day to the time of day and the warmth of the day. So as the night gets later and you tell it, hey, normally I get up, for me, it's 4:30 in the morning. Then right around probably 6:37, it looks at my location, says, okay, Don, you're on the East Coast. We know it's going to get dark around this time. What it does is it starts actually changing the display mechanics to be kind of a more orange glow, removing a lot of that blue light. Mm-hmm. And it happens very slowly. And at first you won't even notice it until it's like fully turned on. And or someone walks over to your screen and goes, what's wrong with your screen? It's all orange. And it's because it's just removing a lot of that blue light. And so I found that it helps overall if I'm working into the evening. So I can just kind of turn it off and I'm not like blue light, you know, infused all night long, if that makes sense.
So I definitely used Flux before and it's the same thing. Then I don't know where it was. I ran into some message or someone told me, hey, actually, like, you know, the whole Flux thing doesn't really work. It almost works like a placebo because like the whole blue light, reducing blue light thing doesn't necessarily actually work as much. Here's the thing though, I'm like a little torn about it. So I've been trying to not use it and use it and see the difference just like to experiment with myself. Cause like, you know, why not? But I read somewhere saying that actually, you know, those studies that everyone points to basically just says that I don't want to like botch the details because I don't want to like, this is like one of those things where it's health related. So you should definitely do your own research.
Mm-hmm.
But I can almost have sworn there's a Quora link here. So I'll add that in the show notes, but it's basically a little hard to explain. But like long story short, I have it installed on my home machine. So I use it on my home machine, but my work laptop, I actually don't have it installed just because I'm like trying to see like, hey, does it actually not make a difference? But I don't know, like it's hard to tell because on my phone, like I do have it installed, like on like my Android phone, like it definitely is there. And for some reason, when I'm on bed and I'm like looking at something that's not a bright white blue, something makes me feel like even if it's a placebo, I don't know, I feel like it works. So on my mobile phones, which for folks who don't know, like they have that now on like the Android phones as well, I definitely use it on that one. For my computer laptops, I'm like a little torn. I don't know. Like, so that's why it's a little tricky for me to say, but I'm very curious about it.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, they do have, it's the URL is getflux.com. And then on that, I have a link called research, so /research.html, where they have a bunch of like medical research around it. And I could see how you'd want to test this, because I actually went through this exact same phase at one point, saying, you know, I'm not sure if this does anything. And I did that exact thing of testing it, because I turned it up really high. I said, you know what? I want this thing to just like go, like remove all the blue light per se as much as possible. And you'll notice it turns like this weird reddish orange.
Yeah.
And then what I ended up finding out is actually I got used to it. And then I was falling asleep at normal times that I'd like. And then
So
I was like, all right.
Okay.
I kind of believed in it. I'm like, but then again, I need to have like a control, right? And so like, well, how can I control this? And so I did the same thing. I turned it off and I found myself kind of staying up later again. I'm like, all right, maybe this has some effect. And so then I kind of started playing with it some more, kind of doing different tests. And then I started taking even more into smaller fine grain tests of, for example, if I'm sitting in the computer, it's 9:30 at night, which is really close to when I go to bed anyway, but I need to get something done. I find myself really, really tired at the computer. But I'm like, you know what? I have to get this done. I have a deadline, whatever. If I have Flux on, I'll remember I have it on. I'm like, well, you know what? Let me turn this off. And what I've found is when I turn it off, it's super bright. Like I'll get really blasted in the face. I'm like, wow. And I wake up from it. And then like you could tell it in Flux, say, hey, disable for 1 hour. And it will just slowly fade it off. And then you'll be back to full screen. And then when the hour is over, you'll see it slowly over the course of like 30 seconds turn back into.
Right. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'll look up and I'm like, no way, it's been an hour. And I'll look up and I'm like, oh my goodness, like I gotta go to bed. And it's one of those things, I've tested this continually and I've done the same thing with my phone. Anytime for me, when I consume a lot of like screen time, bright screen, mm-hmm. I definitely have terrible sleep. Now that's my own personal test. I think mm-hmm. everyone should take their own time and see if that's the case with them. Have you really noticed that much of a difference, or are you still kind of on the edge?
I actually have like noticed a difference. Like, well, personally, I've noticed a difference, but I don't know if it is a placebo kind of effect. And like in the same way that you said, right? Like if I see my screen is like a dark orange, I mean, it's because it's gradual. I don't realize that until a certain point. But when I see it's like a dark orange, almost to the point of red, then I'm like, oh my God, it is really late. What am I doing now? So it's almost like an implicit signal saying I need to go to sleep. So it's worked that way. Actually, and I don't want to like paint the wrong image. I just looked at some of those links, and a lot of what they say is basically it points to a lot of research that's done, relevant research on their website. So it actually does seem to work for most people. It's just that it hasn't been in quotes scientifically tested, you know. So basically, I think like the overwhelming response is like, yeah, it kind of works, so just use it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think I should just go back to installing it also on my work laptop.
Yeah, it's one of the things. I mean, it's not for everybody. If you do work, if you're a designer or you do work with a lot of things where you need color matching, you need you're going to want to turn this off because it will turn your colors completely wrong. If you're coding, it will really help because you're just looking at text and that really doesn't matter. So definitely play with it, see if it works for you. I think that wraps it up for all the tools that I have. It was a long list. I know we've kind of been on a wild ride here, so thanks for hanging in there.
Yeah, I hope folks find like this useful. It's always like, because I think like these also keep evolving in time. So if you want to hear more, if anything specific that you folks want to know, just feel free to ping Don or me on the Discord channel. And like, yeah, we'll get back to you as soon as we can. All right, Don. That's a good one. I think this is a good time to wind the show down.
Definitely.
If folks want to reach out to you, what would be a good way to find out some of the crazy tools that you've been adding on to your pipeline?
The best way is going to reach out to me is going to be on Twitter, and that's at Don Felker. And then you can follow me also on Instagram at Don Felker, where I kind of post some longer messages and some different stuff. And also have the kind of little Instagram stories, you know, where people kind of follow along your day there, kind of just to see what I'm up to here and there. What about you, Kaushik? How do folks see how to stay productive with you?
Very similar, like Kaushik Gopal on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter when folks message me there. Instagram, Kaushik Gopal on Instagram as well. I've been trying to be better about posting more stuff, so you can reach me there. And if folks want to reach out to us through other channels, now we have the Discord channel. So that's like a good place to reach either. Both Don and I are on Discord, so you can reach out to us there. And we also have our YouTube channel, which is Fragmented. We'll add links to all of that in the show notes. So thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. And before we wind the show down, I also want to thank Nevercode for sponsoring the show. Specifically, their brand new cloud-based CI/CD tool called CodeMagic. They partnered with Google and released the very first CI/CD tool exclusively for building Flutter apps. Build, test, and publish your Flutter apps in record time with CodeMagic. Check them out at codemagic.io while the service is still available to everyone for free. My thanks to Nevercode again for sponsoring the show. That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.